Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
Hi, I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are almost finishing up the – actually, this will be the last show in the month of February.
It's not a leap year this year, is it?
No.
Leapfrog?
No, it ends on the 28th. 4 days from now, we're done.
All over. And then it becomes March. And then we're changing the clocks on March 8th.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Do we jump forward or spring back? Do we spring forward or do we spring back?
I think we spring back. No, we spring forward.
Yeah, you spring forward and then you –
we get more
fall forward,
fall behind, fall back,
fall behind.
You know, I got to tell you something. Our show last week went over pretty well.
Did you get one letter?
No, I got actually, I got a half a letter. No, I got a lot of emails from people. They were just absolutely tickled with our discussion of Fig Newtons and the dog show.
Yeah, this is great.
I think we've hit a new low.
I hate to say it, but we're supposed to be talking about stocks.
Well, I mean,
supposed to compliment us for a fantastic stock picks.
No, it had nothing to do with it. They thought that the discussion about Fig Newtons and the in-depth analysis of the lines that they cook on, and then of course our discussion of the underhanded movement of the judges to dogs was pretty exciting.
Well, I think they probably liked the dog idea more, because I didn't even know any of that. And the Fig Newton story I've told a million times.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the markets, though, because that's what we're here for, right?
Yes.
New highs for the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500. NASDAQ is the highest in 15 years.
Good.
Question is, how much longer can this go on? Currently, the forward P.E. on the S&P 500 is 18.2.
And historically, it is?
16.
Okay, so it's too high.
Too high. But Janet Yellen came out today and was talking about she has the roundest head.
She has a perfectly round head. It used to be it's as though when she's dead, it would be a bowling ball.
It's perfectly round. It really is. I mean, it's
two
like...
two-hole ball.
What is that cartoon?
A three-hole ball.
What is that cartoon that is a South Park?
Yeah, like all the characters.
It's like a South Park character.
Yeah, perfectly round head.
But she was testifying today and tomorrow as well in the Humphrey Hawkins testimony, saying that, maybe we'll keep things, the patient idea, at least for the next two meetings, we're going to keep rates low. But they're still paving the way for a rate increase the way I see it.
Well, that's what everybody says.
Yeah. They don't seem to be swaying.
Except I don't think they should do anything until we have the second crash.
How can you have a crash when they just keep on pumping money in? They keep on keeping rates low. And how does there a crash?
They're not gonna, they won't keep it up. You watch. There'll be some, but somehow, some way, it'll be after the next election. The new president will be in. It's going to be Hillary Clinton or Elizabeth Warren, some woman. And she's going to not do well. She's not going to get along with Yellen.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be yelling at each other.
So you got a cat fight.
Cat fight, yeah. Cat fight. So, and she'll be out and bring somebody else in who's got more... better ideas, and they're going to pull the plug on all this, and then we're going to have a crash. You watch.
Interesting. Well, one of the things that I found interesting was if you read the actual prepared testimony of what Janet Yellen was going to read initially to Congress today.
Oh, they had a prepared testimony you could read in advance?
Always.
Nice.
Well, actually, it was supposed to be released at 8:30 in the morning, and then it was pushed to 10 o'clock, which was going to be synchronized with when she actually started. Now, you could read it faster than she would read it, so you'd be able to read in advance what's going on as she read it to Congress. But if you read it, it would say a statement, you know, whatever it would say, like, things are getting better. Okay, I'm just giving an example. And then there would be a however. There were more howevers and more on the other hands and more, you know, buts. It was unbelievable.
Huh.
And it wasn't as convoluted as you would see from a Greenspan, but it was convoluted in that they were hedging everything that they said. They didn't want to upset anyone, which is what they're, I guess, all about. You know, they're really the quintessential cheerleader for markets and the economies. But
yeah.
they're often wrong. You know, as economists, they're terrible.
Well, I would say that's probably true. Yeah. The only thing they, at least in my opinion, the only thing they've really done right was quantitative easing, and most people don't think that's right, which is why I think that's going to get pulled.
Well, quantitative easing is pulled. Right now, they're still just doing reinvestment of $10 to $15 billion per month. She did mention her concerns about China and the slowdown, that probably there'll be a greater slowdown than anticipated.
But yeah.
But that oil prices would be really good for consumers.
Yeah, I heard that.
But consumers aren't spending. Confidence is down from last month. Still very high. It was down at...
Yeah, still high. They're spending. They're out there. I mean, you see them at the stores. It's not like the Costcos are empty.
No, not at all. Definitely not Costcos. Hey, I just got a... you know what I did? I got a... You ever been to a Restaurant Depot?
Restaurant Depot?
It's one of these...
Restaurant supply place?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Really cool. But they're open not to the public, but to the industry. Well, I got myself a card this week.
You get yourself a what?
A card, you know, a membership.
A card to go in.
Yeah.
Oh.
Very exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure that's unbelievably difficult.
Well, you have to provide all sorts of forms and tax things and all that, but no, you can get away with it. But what's really cool is you go in there and there's an area that has, you know, one of the rows has paper goods, one of the rows has canned goods and all the different things. And then they have the area that's vegetables and meats, as an example. Well, when you go in there... In that section.
Oh, this is kind of like a cash and carry. We have them out here.
They give you a orange jacket because it's so cold in there.
Oh, brother.
It's like a gigantic fridge.
Yeah, well, they have cash and carry. When we had the deli, we had the we went in there. You can still go in there after and buy stuff at wholesale. But it's usually, you know, big, giant pieces of meat and stuff. But they have the same thing. They have these it's a freezer.
Right.
And all the stuff is in the freezer, and you go in there. But they didn't. They never had. I guess you Floridians probably are so delicate that you need this special gear to go into the freezer.
It was cold last week. It was like 40 here.
Oh,
I mean,
well, that is cold. Actually.
It was cold. It was very cold here, and it was windy, blustery.
It's not snowing.
No, it maybe in some parts, but no, it hasn't. So anyway, Janet Yellen did what she could. Markets were bouncing around all day, up, down, you know, kind of the small caps were down. NASDAQ was moving around and actually finished, I guess, flat or a little bit up. Dow Jones was up about 90 points today. And all exciting things happened. Now, one of the things I thought was really interesting was that when we look at the earnings of the S&P 500 over the last year or so, 50% of the growth of the earnings of the S&P 500 was attributable to Apple. How do you like that?
Really?
Yeah, that's astounding.
That's not good.
That's amazing.
Well, it is amazing, but it's not good.
They're on their way to being the first $1 trillion company. Stock needs to breach 142.
Oh, no problem.
And where is it now? Apple is... Where is Apple now? I think it's at 130-something.
Now that they're doing a car...
Yeah, how do you like that? A minivan. Where is that? Let me think. Let me find what Apple is. Apple. I think it was 132 or something like that. I can't find it.
Short of a lifetime.
Apple, there's a lot of people saying the chart looks really questionable right now.
Oh, really?
I don't know what looks questionable about a stock chart that just goes straight up.
Well, yeah. That may be what it is.
Maybe that's the problem. I don't know where Apple is. Anyway.
What do they say it looks questionable for?
I don't know. There's a bunch of players coming out there now saying that it's a classic, you know, correction for the stock is looming. Now, let's look at a stock chart.
Oh, yeah, you'll have a correction for sure, but that doesn't mean it, you know, much for the long haul.
Now, let's take a look here. AAPL is the symbol for Apple. And let's take a look at Google Finance. Look at their chart very quickly. It was down 0.5% today, which was nothing. 132.17 is the closing price. It was as high as 133.60. So it's pretty close to getting to the point where
trillion.
It's going to... Yep. And for whatever reason, this is not cooperating with me. Here we go. Okay, so let's see. I'm going to look at a five-year chart. Now, it's going a bit parabolic right now, but the last 4 weeks or so, year-to-date, let's see. Apple is up 19% year-to-date. Since January, when it came out with its earnings and all, it's doing pretty well. 6 months up 30%, 3 months up 12%. 1 year, it's up 76%. 5 years is up 358%. 5 years it's up 350%, and 10 years it's up 2,031%.
Yeah, we missed the boat on that one.
Yeah, let's see it all, how far this goes back. Okay, so going back to 1981, it's up 25,000%.
Yeah, that's one to buy. The thing is, anyone who, of course, you always can look in hindsight, you can see that stuff. And if you would have bought it in 1981, I guarantee you would have been out long before now.
Oh, it was flat until 19... Well, let's see, go all the way back here. It was flat until 07. And then it started moving up to 20. And then the split adjusted. Dropped back down. And then it really started moving in... I guess we could really say March of 2010. Obviously, this is when the iPod came out and when they started doing a lot of different things. I mean, listen, right. this company was almost bankrupt. We know that.
Yeah, that's the time to invest.
Exactly. Okay, let's see here. So, hey, I thought this was interesting. Did you know that oil production currently exceeds demand by 1 million barrels per day?
Good.
Yep. And yesterday, there was a big spike. All of a sudden, markets were selling off oil, and things weren't looking good. It was under 50, and all of a sudden, there was a news item. Oil spiked. Because a Nigerian oil minister said that OPEC may have an emergency meeting about the price drop in oil. And it just jumped. And I think it was kind of interesting. Who in their right mind is believing a Nigerian oil minister?
Well, apparently this guy, this Nigerian oil minister, has got some money stashed away that he's going to give to you if you can bring it into the United States, where he'll give you a big commission.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, can you believe that? That the market is so...
they pay any attention to Nigerian anything.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, they do have. They do produce oil.
Yeah, and they're part of OPEC, so I think that was interesting. But, you know, he used the word may. Not that they are, but they may have a meeting coming up about the price drop. Meanwhile, OPEC is saying they don't really give a damn. You know, everything we've been hearing from OPEC is, we don't really care. We're just going to keep on pumping. As a matter of fact, there was a non-OPEC nation in the Middle East that said, hey, you know what? We think oil bottomed. We're going to press our oil production to its limit. We're going to increase production right now because we think that, seriously, this is the...
You guys are maniacs.
This is the wisdom of them.
Yeah. You know.
Now, Greece got a four-month extension.
That's a good one.
Greece was looking for a six-month extension for, you know, let's kind of play this backwards for a second.
By the way, oil 30, no problem.
Yeah, well, it looks like it's possibly heading there right now. There was another big build in the API numbers out this evening, and tomorrow was the API. No, what is it? APIs tonight, DOE's tomorrow. Anyway, 10:30 tomorrow morning, we'll see what numbers they come out there. They're trying to keep it about $50 a barrel. It looks like right now.
Good luck.
Yeah. So Greece. You know, if you think about what happened with Greece, Greece was looking to basically tell the EU and all the people involved in their bailouts, you know, stick it, right? We're not going to pay this stuff. We're not going to do this whole deal where you want us to do austerity. We're not going to do anything that says this because, you know, our unemployment rate for the under 25 male is 50%. And, you know, we're having all sorts of problems. And, you know, we have this tax issue and paying too much in taxes to try to repay. And, you know, the bailout rules and regulations and everything involved is very difficult for us, so screw you. And a new president came in, a new leader, and he basically ran on that platform. He goes and he tells, you know, EU, hey, this is what we're going to do. And they said, oh, no, I don't think so. Well, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're not backing down. They have all these meetings. And they said, by the way, we're going to screw you, but you know what? We need about another $9 billion from you first. Because our banks are running out of money. There's been a major run on the banks, and we don't want to have capital controls and all this. And obviously, even though we're going to probably end up leaving the euro and all that, we're not going to repay you. We still need about $9 billion from you, which is just amazing and ballsy, right?
Very ballsy.
Very ballsy. So they go into these meetings, and they, you know, one of the meetings, the Greek prime minister says, you know what, I'm out of here. Forget it. You guys aren't doing what I asked you to do. He gets on a plane. He leaves. Just that's it. Close them down and leaves. Well, you know, things are getting a little hairy. The markets are getting really crushed over there. The banks are seeing a run on their assets. Massive amounts of money are leaving the country. They go into this meeting that now they want a 6-month extension so they can, you know, figure out what to do here. They need money to make sure that everything stays, you know, stays going and their economy stays moving. They come out of this basically conceding everything. So they didn't want oversight from the Troika. They didn't want to have any kind of rules that were going to require them to stay within the austerity. But they ended up leaving this whole deal with a four-month extension and all of the rules that they were trying to undo. Nothing was undone.
Well, they got four more months to work on that.
So who's stupid in this whole thing? Is it the Greeks who basically believe that they can get out of this deal? Or is it the EU that said, okay, we'll give you more time to figure out ways that you can screw us?
I haven't really don't know. I think it's both sides are insincere.
Yeah.
It's well, cultural.
Yeah. And the markets moved up about 10% today in Greece. Oh, you know, hoorah. Oh, exciting. We got four more months. But now all this does is once again create the inevitable where in 4 months they're going to have to come up with a plan. And if they're going to try to stick to this whole deal, already there's problems, by the way. They were supposed to come up with all of the oversight and what they were going to do to make sure things worked well in order to get this continuation of this bailout by Monday. They couldn't do that, so it was Tuesday. And then they couldn't even keep that going, one day lag already. And then on top of that, there's some problems brewing because a lot of the people in Greece who voted for this guy, and they're saying, what did you do here? So there's still, we're going to see this continue for some time, and I would bet that eventually Greece is going to be leaving the European Eurozone. I don't see any reason, any way they could stay with what this whole...
Well, I agree with the thinking that there's, it's hard to imagine how they can stay, but I just don't see them... I don't see the scenario. I used to, but I don't see how the Eurozone can survive if this sort of thing is allowed to happen.
But if they don't allow it to happen, how does it survive either? I mean, first of all, it's a two-way street, right? I mean, Greece has to agree to the rules and all the things that are going on, and the Eurozone has to then abide by their side too. So if one of the sides is going to say, no, we're not doing this anymore, how does it all stay together?
Well, I don't know. This has been a soap opera for a couple of years now.
Well, the point is that next 4 months is going to continue with this whole soap opera. That's the point of all this. Hewlett-Packard, one of the companies that we love to hate, seems that they can't get their crap together still. Earnings results, they beat by about 1 cent, but they missed on revenues. They guide the second and fiscal year 15 below consensus. And, of course, there has to be an excuse. They can't just say they did a shitty job. They said that currency headwinds are going to really demolish a lot of their earnings moving forward. Stock is down 7% after hours.
Yeah.
Lending Club, you know who they are? You familiar with this whole Lending Club thing?
No, I do not know the Lending Club, I don't think.
So
tell me about it.
There's something that's going on is that, the average guy can go to a bank and beg for money. And we know that banks are not giving to people unless there's a major amount of collateral or there's some really good business behind it or something, right? We know banks are being very stingy with what they're giving out these days compared to what they used to.
Yes.
So the Lending Club pops up. Well, this is kind of a, we'll call it a peer-to-peer kind of a consumer-to-consumer style lending situation.
Right. Now I do know about this. This is a kind of a spin-off idea from like those things where you ask people for money to fund startups.
Right.
Kind of Kickstarter.
Kickstarter or...
and it's also kind of like...
Micro-lending.
Micro-payment operation kind of thing.
So you can
third world countries, which I guess we've become.
Yeah, well, you can go in there, and let's say you want to maybe get some good interest on your money. What you could do is you could say, all right, I'm going to put up $5,000, and you could do a couple of different things. You can pool the money, and you could just say, okay, here's this. I want this kind of loans, and I'm going to give $5,000 maybe to a business loan for restaurants, let's just say, something like that. You can go after individual loans, and there's different ways that you can do this, and there's different rules on who's liable for what and payments and things of that nature. But you can target a specific loan that's maybe out there. So somebody may put up a request and you can say, yeah, I'll fund that. And maybe you'll get 7% on your money or 6% on your money or 9% on your money, depending on how aggressive it is and what the collateral is and things of that nature. And basically, Lending Club gets a transaction fee to do this whole deal. And depending on whether you're going to pool the money and just do something they do in a big fund, or if you can do it directly with the person who's borrowing money from you, there's all different ways to do this. So they came public recently. And one of the things that's happening is that there's a lot of competition now. The big banks are saying, wait a minute, you know what? We're not going to let this happen. So we're going to create this kind of, what would it be called? A lending marketplace? Maybe something like that we could call it. And we're going to compete with this because, you know, we don't want them taking away all of the funding. And we're going to, of course, take a spiff on the whole deal. So a lot of companies are coming out with massive amounts of competition to this company. Well, Lending Club, if you look at their stock, has done very well, you know, since it came public. Came out with their earnings tonight. The company beat by only about one penny for the quarter. It beat slightly, but it only earned 1 cent for the quarter. It only earned 1 cent. Now, I mean, this should be, if it's working correctly, you would think that they should be earning a lot more money.
They should be doing a lot better.
Yeah, the 1 cent. I don't mean 1 cent. They made more than that, but 1 cent per share.
Yeah, I know, but that's, 1 cent.
So the company's down about 10% after hours. And I think there was a lot of expectation that there'd be a lot more going on. Now, they did have a lot more loans. There was about 120% gain in overall loans over the last year or so. So that's gaining some popularity. I just wonder, though, if many of the loans that are being given are to qualified individuals or not, or, you know, who's doing the underwriting of this whole thing? Who's really doing, I mean, again, Lending Club comes into play here. They're doing some.
Yeah, there's due diligence. There's a lot of things involved here.
Right.
Or there should be.
Right. But I think individuals are just finding that, oh, I can lend money and, you know, just I can guarantee to get my money back. And there are some ways that there are some guarantees in there and all that. But there's also the potential that if you lend to the wrong party, you're going to have big problems. I was sent a notice that, I think there was one of my businesses. I said, one of those mail things that come. Lending Club, I was offered like $250,000.
For like, what?
I don't know. I was pre-approved at 7%.
Pre-approved, yeah. Well, the pre-approved course is a scam. Although it should be busted. People who do that. Consumer protection isn't any good in this country.
But it was like 7%, which is better than a credit card loan at 20%, I guess.
Yeah, 7% is not a great deal, but it's not bad.
Right, for a business loan, it's not the worst thing. But point is that who knows, you know, who's giving this money, and if people.
Yeah.
Just,
also, what does the fine print say?
There's a lot of fine print.
Day late, now it's 25%, and they've become gougers.
Yeah, and again, this is consumer to consumer or consumer to business. This is consumers who are or retail.
Who is behind this operation?
I don't know, Lending Club. Company called Lending Club.
No, I mean, who's the people? Are they from bank? Are they bankers? Or look at these guys.
Let's take a look if we can find anything here. Let's see. LC, Lending Club. Down 10% here.
Some guy named Renaud LaPlanche.
Oh.
Capital L, small A. Mm-hmm. He gets paid $500,000 a year, not much. Founder, chief executive officer.
There's a CPO, a chief people officer, Angela LaFleur.
I don't have LaFleur on my list. Angela. Carrie Dolan, I got, that's CFO.
Yep.
Scott Sanborn and John McElwain, CTO.
What about the chief risk officer? Chao Mei Chang.
Yeah, he's probably part of the triads or something. He's going to take care of the collections.
I'm trying to see here. Return on average.
They're over here on Stevenson Street in San Francisco.
Yep, right down the block.
I could go visit. Hey, how you guys doing?
742 employees. Net profit margin, -13%. That's pretty ugly.
That's nothing to brag about.
Yep. The company operates an online market that connects borrowers looking for loans with individuals with the money to fund them. It lends money to help consumers pay off credit cards, consolidate debt, and take vacations. They can get a loan to take a vacation.
It says that?
Yeah, it says right here.
Wow.
Its platform enables customers to invest in and obtaining personal loans by providing financial data and credit information. The company provides search algorithms, credit decisioning, a secondary market, and a choice of loan durations. Let's see.
It's got a nice number here. Quality revenue growth year to year is 104%.
Yeah. The company serves the professional fixed income investors such as family offices and insurance companies. So I guess what's happening here is like family offices and like maybe even investment advisors like myself would be – actually, I was hit up by another company that was a competitor to this company. And they were saying, well, you know, you can get your clients these opportunities to directly invest and give them a higher interest rate. I mean, this just screams to me of going back to the times when, you know, people back in, call it early to mid-2000s, when people were just, you know, forking over money to all sorts of places because the trust was there. You look at like a Stanford. These guys were just talking about the guaranteed CD that was yielding 10% guaranteed CD. And it was out of a bank in Antigua. And the reason you can get that guarantee was that they were taking the money, and while they were guaranteeing it, they were trading the money behind the scenes in stocks and things of that nature. And they were making all that money, and they were just doing it in the form of a CD, guaranteeing it. And I said to them, I said, what happens if I ever need my money due to the fact that maybe there's a problem, whatever? I mean, do I have to go after the company in Antigua? Oh, yeah, but that's not going to be a problem because it's very liquid, all this. And they had millions and billions of dollars. Now, you know what happened at the end of that story, right?
Oh, I can tell.
It was a Ponzi scheme.
Sure.
And they also presented to me for one of my clients one time, because my client called me in to meet with them. And I didn't like the CD for the first time. I said, don't do this. Okay. The next thing was a deal where they were levering bonds.
Leveraging.
Yeah. Leveraging bonds. And it was a short duration and a mid duration bond. And they would short the long and go, you know, leverage up the short. Anyway, it was like a 12% guaranteed deal. Now, obviously, none of this actually was good. Some of it was part of their Ponzi scheme, I suppose, and some of it wasn't. Some of it was just bad investing. Bottom line was, though, that, you know, obviously people got screwed in the end of this whole thing. And this guy went crazy. I think he's still in jail. He went like Looney Tunes. Alan Stanford.
Oh, that was Stanford.
Yeah, that was Stanford.
Yeah, you know, I ran into someone who worked for him.
Oh, really? I have a friend that worked for him. And part of their operation was actually good.
Yeah, apparently. I guess the person told me they can't get work.
Because he worked there?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it says no one will hire you. They think everyone that worked there is a scammer.
Yeah. Let's see what else is going. Oh, existing home sales are slowing down. Seems like there's a massive amount of inventory build around the country, except for Miami and New York, where there's been there's a lot of overbuilding, which is interesting. The inventory is... Actually, inventories are coming down around the country. Pardon me. Inventories are coming down around the country. Not a lot of existing homes to buy, except for Miami and New York, where there's a lot of overbuilding. I told you what's going on down here. It's insane.
They're just building like crazy?
Yeah, they're building like crazy. You know, you look at like
Florida.
Who is checking on these traffic patterns? Because they're building apartment buildings everywhere where there's a lot of traffic. And you're like, well, they can't widen the roads here. What's going to happen when all of these... You know, condos and apartments and renters all have cars and try to get around. It's going to be a disaster.
Sounds like it.
Yep. So there was some negative news from the NAHB early this week that the confidence from builders wasn't that high. And they started coming down a bit. There was some other recent reports from like Lennar and a few other companies that were out there saying, hey, you know what? We're not really thinking things are great. Our expectations moving forward aren't that great. Stock came down very hard. Toll Brothers came out today, beating earning expectations, pushed the builders up to a multi-year high today. All in a matter of about a month, they dropped down and then just boomed.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. And on the backs of that, Home Depot beat nicely. Stock is doing very well. I think they also announced a pretty big buyback plan. By the way, you know, this whole bull market thing. You know, until stock buybacks cease or are no longer, you know, produced, I don't see how you can have a massive correction here. Think about this. You have a stock of a company, and they institute a, pick a number, $5 billion stock buyback plan, right? $5 billion.
Yeah, buying at the high too.
But let's just say the stock drops 10%. They're just buying. They have this program in place.
Yeah, they're just buying no matter what.
So they're just buying. How do you have a major drop of a stock if there's a $5 billion? All they have to do is go in there and buy, let's call it, $250 million of the stock in one day. That holds the price pretty nicely.
They'll keep it from going down.
Yeah. So, you know, this whole stock buyback thing, I think, is one of the, I really do think, of the backbone. Low interest rates is really the reason for the buybacks, because companies can issue debt like crazy at low prices, at low yields.
Right, and then buy back the stock.
All right, have all this money and buy back the stock.
Yeah, this is probably the going to be partly the cause of the next crash.
I would tend to agree with you because, you know, companies are now going to own all of their own stock. And as stocks come in, technically they're owning a piece of their own stock that's coming in. And if they don't have the opportunity to buy back the stocks, maybe because interest rates are too high, it's not cost effective to do so, you could have a real problem here. It almost compounds the problem.
Yeah, and then if they have to sell their stock,
yep,
it's just going to drive the price down, and they're going to lose money on the whole transaction of buying high and selling low. And they're not going to have the market cap because it'll be driving the price down as fast as they kept it propped up. And so they're not going to have any leverage to do any loans or do any business with banks because it's going to be in the tank. Yeah, no, this is disaster waiting to happen. You spotted this years ago.
Yeah, but it's running for a while.
Bitching about IBM doing this.
Yeah. I need to ask you a question about, before we talk about some other things here, just to segue into a non-financial. Did you watch the Academy Awards?
Yeah, I did.
What do you think about Neil Patrick Harris?
You know, he is a kind of a professional host. And I thought, you know, it was better than some people. I think he brought something to the event that nobody else seems to be able to do, which was just by looking at the set, that fantastic set they had, and the presentation, which I think is the best they've done in 10 years or more. It was very pretty. And I think he brought some Broadway people in there to liven up the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like a Broadway play.
Right.
I mean, if you've been to a Broadway play, the big ones, they're on a huge stage. They're extremely elaborate. They're just over the top. And that's what this thing was.
But what do you think of him as the actual MC?
Yeah, he's kind of a smarmy guy, in my opinion. He's got the one-liners every so often. He's kind of soft. His humor is soft. Doesn't offend anybody, really. And
I found
the perfect MC for those guys. They're
really
so sensitive.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's not like Ricky Gervais. Ricky Gervais?
Well, yeah, he never did the Oscars that I know of.
No,
he did the Golden Globes.
They won't.
But
you
don't like him?
Neil Patrick Harris?
Yeah.
I thought he was boring.
Yeah, well. He's soft. He doesn't offend anybody.
Billy Crystal was much better.
Who?
Billy Crystal.
He won't do it.
Well, the same.
Billy Crystal was better.
Yeah. We have some questions that came in on Twitter. I put out a tweet and I said, anybody?
Yeah, that's right. Somebody wants to know how you short stocks.
Yeah. Let's see. I got something from Nick the Rat.
Oh, good old Nick.
Can you give a starter guide on how to start investing on your own? No. Next.
You have a book?
I do have a book, yeah. How do you invest in your own? There's two books, actually. You have The Disciplined Investor and The Winning Investor. Investing on your own.
Buy those books and read them.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to do it. I think reading books, seeing, depending on how you want to invest and where you want to do it, I think reading, this is lame, but reading books is probably one of the better ways to do it.
Yeah.
Following some of the greats also, read some of the books that are out there from that, and I mean, it depends on how much you want to do on your own. Let's see. We have D Think at Distracted Think. Should I sell my Apple stock? You want to take that?
No.
Okay.
I'll take it, yes, but the answer is no.
Okay.
I mean, I think someday it's going to be the world's greatest short, but that someday could be 10 years from now.
Right.
Although this car thing, you know, this is another new deal, so. Who knows? I mean, it's a trillion-dollar company. This will be the biggest company in the world.
It is the biggest company in the world.
And they really only have four products or five products. It's a joke.
Yeah. It is the biggest company in the world now. Next thing is watch. We'll see how the watch plays out.
The watch, everyone now is predicting, is going to be a big flop.
Really? I'm interested in seeing how this works. Eric Hopp writes, curious what your gain loss would look like if you accounted for dividends. Can you add a column to the show? In other words, the dividends that you get on a stock. I'll see if we can do that inside of the DH Unplugged stock picks in the Google spreadsheet. I don't know if that's available there. You know, a lot of our stocks are not held for very long. Some of them are. We have them for a year. So if there was a dividend on it.
It'll be a minor number, and very few of the stocks that we're picking, although I think we have done a few. Are high dividend stocks. There's not that many out there anyway, because the interest rates being what they are, the stocks are reflective of that. You rarely find a stock with dividends more than 5%.
Now, where it may hurt or us to a degree is the shorts. Of course, if you have a stock short, you would then have you would have a negative. You'd have to pay the dividend.
Yes.
So that could be a problem.
But I don't know that I think we probably shorted a few companies that have a dividends that has to be paid, have to be paid.
Alan Adler says, Tesla, is it a short a good idea? But how do you get shares to short? Or do you go with the puts and naked calls, yay, nay? Well, first of all, just to answer that question, you could go with puts on it. Obviously, Tesla is a high-priced stock in the 200s, and also it's a highly volatile stock, therefore the puts may be expensive, but that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is short stock. How do you get short stock? Well, depending on your account, you can't do it in an IRA. You go to the person, place that you deal with in terms of your in terms of your brokerage account, and some will require you to get an advanced approval to short a stock. Other platforms, such as like Interactive Brokers, just click the sell button. And if you sell it and you don't own it first, do all your short. Simple as that. Let's see here.
You are expected to buy it at some point.
Yeah, well, in theory. Let's see. let's see here. Barn Owl Bill. Is this just the beginning? JP Morgan is charging for deposits. I'm clicking on that story right now. JP Morgan is preparing to charge large institutional customers for some deposits.
Negative interest rate.
Yep, citing new rules that make holding money for clients too costly. That's unbelievable that a bank would do that. It's aiming to reduce the affected deposits by billions of dollars with a focus on bringing the number down this year, these people said. These people said. Huh, that's kind of funny. The move is the latest in a series of steps large global banks have been discussing in recent months to discourage certain deposits due to new regulations on low interest rates. I'm not sure what that does. Where do they, I guess, I don't know. They're less. JP Morgan is making the move because certain deposits are less profitable to handle than they used to be. Yeah, for example, you know, in our brokerage accounts for our clients, you know, you get 0.1%. The problem is that's bad enough, but the management fees, where a lot of these companies used to make a lot of money on their money markets, JP Morgan, Goldman, right. The problem is they would charge, let's call it 0.5% to manage that money. Well, they can't get a 0.5% fee and give you anything. They'd have to go negative because they're not getting that kind of rate themselves. The spreads aren't there. So what's happening is they've had to waive their management fees in order to give you even the slightest amount.
Yeah, and they don't want to do that.
Of course not. So now they're thinking about, I don't know where they're going to push clients' money to. That's kind of a scary situation.
Cash in the couch. Greenbacks.
Well, when you're holding money in your account in contemplation of doing something, of buying something, I guess just give zero. I would say just give zero on the money. Leave it in a cash account and just get zero on it. The problem is there's still administration fees on that.
Yeah, they still lose money on the deal.
Yeah, that's not good for them. It's a problem for all of us, actually. Well, that's our Twitter section for this evening.
Well, that was enlightening.
Yeah, I thought so. Tesla, by the way, was named the best car for 2015 by Consumer Reports.
Second time, I think.
Yeah, there you go. Very nice. Great car.
Yeah, it's a great car. If you have $80,000 to drop on something and you don't mind it being electric and kind of inconvenient in that regard, it's a great car.
Yep. President Obama.
Fast.
Very fast. Very quiet and very fast. President Obama vetoed the Keystone Pipeline tonight.
Yeah, well, that was expected, so there's nothing new there.
Right. Shake Shack, you know, I'm short that.
You brought this up before.
I'm short also that for client portfolios. It was down about 7.5% yesterday, up about 4% or so today. The big question is, how expensive is Shake Shack? Well, the lead underwriters for this have come out with ratings. You know, after the IPO comes out, and they can actually go through the quiet period and the period where they can't do anything. Well, they came out with their recent rating on the stock. Now, the price-earnings ratio of the stock is 620. Very high in price-earnings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lead underwriters, Morgan Stanley and JP Morgan, they don't have buy ratings on them, and their price target is 38 for Morgan and, I believe, 34 for JP Morgan. Stock is currently trading at about 42. Mm-hmm. The lead underwriters are saying it's terribly overvalued.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah. Have you eaten there yet?
I've never seen one.
I mean, I hear that the burgers are unbelievable. But how unbelievable? Have you ever had an unbelievable burger? I mean, I've had some good burgers.
I've had good burgers. I know what a good burger is. I was raised in burger country.
We used to have
19-cent burgers. We used to have the burger places. We still do. There's a lot of them in the Bay Area. We used to have Quickway. We still have In-N-Out burgers. I've had Fat Burgers in Los Angeles. I've tasted burgers, these commercial burgers. I tasted burgers from Zim's. There used to be the Hippo in San Francisco, a very famous burger place. I've had all their burgers.
Do you remember Wetson's?
Lots of burgers.
Remember Wetson's?
What?
Did you have a Wetson's? Wetson's.
No, we never had that. No.
But how good can a burger be that people are waiting online for this thing?
Not that good.
I mean, I just don't understand.
Bull crap.
Yeah.
Come on, a burger. It's a burger.
It's a burger.
Yeah.
It's a hamburger. Net neutrality is on its way and being enforced. I still can't get my head around this whole thing.
Yeah, well, you will when they come knocking.
What is something going to happen to me?
Yeah, they're going to arrest you for podcasting without a license.
We're taking up too much of the net. No, really, am I going to see anything besides maybe some fees somewhere? I guess somebody passed on to me.
Find it worse in service. There's no way the government's getting involved. This can't be good.
Yeah. Macau, revenues are falling pretty precipitously, 50% year-over-year drop in Macau revenue. One of the reasons is that China's been limiting some of the Chinese people that can actually go there, the high rollers. There's all sorts of things that are going on in terms of investigation about who's bringing money there and bringing money back, and maybe some quote-unquote money lost or money laundering, just all sorts of problems. But I also wonder, because we're seeing that, like, what happened in Vegas, their revenues are down dramatically. We're also seeing that Atlantic City basically is folding up, right? Are people maybe getting smarter about casinos that, hey, maybe we shouldn't go there?
No.
They're not.
No.
So what's
Atlantic
happening?
Atlantic City's just mismanaged.
So why are these? Why is this?
Well,
so,
the Macau thing, it's just lots of management, and regulations and local corruption and all these other things. And yeah, people, and it is a little cyclical. People aren't gambling all the time.
Yep.
And the Chinese economy, like we said, is like slowing down. It may be a huge reflection of that. I mean, everything we hear is true. China's going to go into a recession or something. This is probably just a harbinger.
Hmm.
Be perfect. This might be good news for stock traders.
This is the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is the bird in the basket. Quick question. Will Ukraine ceasefire last?
I think it's already been broken, hasn't it?
It's been broken like 700 times already, but it doesn't seem like it's officially broken yet. They're not calling it broken yet.
Well, I don't know. This can't keep going.
Yeah. And Russia was downgraded to junk over the weekend again by Moody's this time.
They actually don't have that bad of a balance sheet, but
well, with the price of oil dropping, it's a real big
problem.
Yeah,
the price of oil is going to hurt them.
Yeah, big problem for them. And in the other news that I thought was interesting, it's and I have a question about this. I'm going to take a couple of sides on this. ISIS is now supposedly making money and huge stockpiles of money by selling human organs. That's how they're
making. This is bull crap.
I think it's bull crap too. Why do you think it's bull crap?
Well, because it doesn't make any sense. They don't have the mechanism and the infrastructure to move the organs from where they need to be. I mean, you need special gear and special planes, and you have to fly them in. You can trace all of them, and most of the organ business is locked up by a couple of monopolies. They wouldn't let anyone get away with this. It's bull crap. It's just the whole story is crazy. It's like them invading the United States with their no ships and no planes. What are they going to do, drive the organs, bounce them around the back of a Toyota? Give me a break.
Well, I was thinking that
And why would they go through this trouble? Do they have a bunch of doctors on the hook that they can just make cut these organs out and then they know how to preserve? They have big hospitals that can do this kind of work in the middle of nowhere, Iraq?
All I know is that it seemed to me that if we were to have a desire in the United States to have a smear campaign, a media blitz, to really put us against this whole ISIS thing, right? What would be the worst thing we can bring up to really turn people against them?
Well, we had the head chopping,
right?
And that only was so. And then they had the burning the guy to death,
right?
And now now they're ghouls stealing organs,
Raping young women, maybe.
And they've already been rapists and slavers,
right?
Slavers, don't forget that.
So this would be perfect.
Well, I mean, this is just another on the checklist. What else can we? What will be next? I don't know. Zombification. I have no idea.
Gosh. Maybe they're
the living dead.
Yep, exactly. All right, how about we take a jaunt over to our stocks?
Yes.
Let's click on this.
Find that link.
And as I mentioned, I will mention again, this is just a game that we play. It is not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. We talk about the gains, losses that we have from the date that we bought it. We usually have a 10% stop on all of these. We'll also disclose whether or not John C. DeVark, myself, or Horowitz & Company clients have a position in any of these that we're talking about here. Like I mentioned a moment ago, Shake Shack, which we are short in the game. We're up 3% on that, even though it was up 4% today. And actually, I need to put a disclosure on that right now because we didn't have it last time. Now we do. Actually, we've actually gone twice on this. Once tried a little bit of it, and stock kept on moving against us. And we said, oh, you know what? We're not going to do this now. And then stock moved up even higher and shorted again. One of the lessons that you learned right here about investing and trading in particular, and really trading more so, is that, you know, your idea may not work out because of timing at any given time. It may be the wrong moment. But
yeah,
don't...
no, that's the biggest problem with stock market trading if you're going to do it at all. It's just the timing is everything. Mm-hmm. And meh.
Yep, exactly. Well, Monster Beverage keeps on moving up another 2% today. I mean, this the potential buyout that they're talking about is keeping the stock going. And obviously, you remember... A couple of years back, there was this whole big thing about these energy beverages. Everybody was freaking out that it was bad for you.
Kill you.
Right, and the stock just got absolutely hammered. And then just started rising up again because many of the companies like Coca-Cola are looking for other avenues to increase their revenues because they're having major problems, you know, with the growth rate. So these are really high-end targets for possible buyouts. But we have a lot of green on the charts today. You see that?
Yeah, and the only high red, and high mean a stock that we've held for more than a few months that is red, is not really that bad. It's down 1%, 1.5%. That's the short of IBM, which is dead money because this really hasn't moved much one way or the other. But it seems to me that if you do short that stock, you're not going to be risking much because it looks to me as though it's at a ceiling. It's right stuck at some like 164. It's just like I'm not moving from here one way or the other.
Yeah, I would agree. The IBM situation is just it doesn't look good. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it's dead, but right now it's still dead money.
Yep.
So it's not really the best thing to have fun. It's no fun watching it do this.
Yep. And Twitter is down 5%. They had that loss of users even though they had a great revenue number and their advertisers did well. I mean, Dick Costello came up with all sorts of excuses and all that. I'm still sticking to the idea that Twitter is a short here. It has some nice momentum after the last earnings, but still, I think
you made a few bucks on the Shake Shack. Now the insider stuff looks like they're still the deal of the century here. Yep. Every one of these is up.
Yep, I agree.
Including my most recent one, which is the Idera Pharmaceuticals.
Yep.
We had another guy, and this was a penny stock, so this thing could still skyrocket. It's up 8%.
Now, I can't resist for this week.
Yeah, I see what you're doing.
I'm going short the Greek market through the ETF GREK.
Okay. I have a pick. Let me look at this. I'm picking... this is a little offbeat, which is one of the reasons I'm picking, because I could keep picking certain pharmaceuticals and companies that have a lot of action. But this one's a little bit of a long shot. Cadbury, Dairy Milk, Oreo, Nabisco. I remember the big Nabisco deal went down for $1 billion. It was a big deal. This is Mondelez International in Deerfield Park, Illinois. M-E-L-Z.
Yep. M-D-L-Z. And you're going long there.
I'm going long, and this is, again, this is insider trading. And I'll do it because this guy, one of the directors, this guy Nelson Peltz.
Yeah, well, he's a big guy.
He's a big guy.
Yeah.
And he, I'm just doing some of his background here. He is gets on these boards, and then he trades the stock. And he has a pretty good track record. Even though if you look at the individual trades, like he recently dumped his Wendy's stock, or at least $18 million worth of it. And one, he sold some of it at $8.90, and then he sold some more at $10.20, most of it at $8.90. And the stock is higher now. It's like 11 or more. And he sold this at the beginning of the year. You'd think, well, you know, this guy, that's not very good. If he's that sharp, he'd stay in it. But in fact, if you go back a year or so, when Wendy's was selling for $4.70 and $5, he bought tons of it. Millions and millions of dollars. And so he got out. So he's gotten out. So this is not bad. Now, he has never traded this that I know of, at least in the near term. Has not traded this stock, Mondelez or whatever it's
Mondelez,
pronounced.
Mondelez. Yep.
And he's just bought a little more than I like. I'm comfortable watching these guys do, even though I've seen him when he sold Wendy's, he sold $144 million worth. He's paid $33 million for almost a million shares of this stuff at the current market price. So, he must know something to throw that kind of money down. I don't see any other reason. He's not doing it because he's a happy-go-lucky guy.
Yeah, he's an activist investor. He's going after, you know, changing something, doing something. And, yeah. And obviously there's a lot of, you know, this was a major consolidation to begin with. So, you know, maybe there's something big there.
Something's up.
Yeah, what else?
And I don't see nothing. That's all I got.
That's all you got.
And I don't see him being, you know, like some of these other guys that get in there and they cause trouble.
Like
I mean,
Icon.
He's a troublemaker too, but Icon, yeah. I don't trust him.
No.
I mean, I wouldn't do insider trading with him going in and out of stuff like this guy.
He's just all over the place. I mean, he's definitely good at what he does, obviously, but I agree.
He's not starving to death.
No, definitely not.
But I like that. This Peltz guy I'm going to follow a little more closely when I see him crop up.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for this show. Thank you for joining us. Follow John Dvorak on Twitter at TheRealDvorak. Myself, Andrew Horowitz, just one word. Andrew Horowitz is the Twitter icon or handle, whatever you call it, the handle, I suppose. Is that what they call it, Twitter handle?
Nickname.
No, the nickname, my Twitter nickname. Even though I'm short the stock, I think it has some good redeeming values overall. So.
that you can use it for free.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm The Real Dvorak, of course.
Of course. All right, I'll see you next week.
All right.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.